From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing Wings of the Master, Episode 7 of Season 2. Joining me today is Coffee with Kenobi special contributor, Tom Gross. Tom was on Season 1 of Rebels Reactions to discuss Path of the Jedi, as well as our Indiana Comic-Con coverage in Star Wars Reads 2015. We're happy to have him back to discuss the Hera-centered episode. Welcome, Tom.
Oh, well, thanks for having me back on the show. It's always a great time to talk Star Wars and everything else we get to do.
Absolutely. It's nice to have you. And this is a new Rebels Reactions for us because we're doing an actual live recording at our place of business. Well, we've got some downtime and things are working out. And if you hear the background noise, we're pretending like it's because the planet's surface is causing problems with planes and microphones. But I think it should turn out okay because we've got Tom here and it's a really amazing episode. And Tom, your overall opinions of Wings of the Master?
Well, first of all, it was great to see a Hera-centered story. I love that character, and while we got a lot of her character last season, it's great to see her grow in this episode. And you know, with season two, I've been left a little. I love the stories, but a little lackluster of action from beginning to end. And this was the answer to that.
I agree. This one delivered. This was probably my favorite episode of season two. It was on par with the Return of Darth Vader, the premiere of season two. But since then, I agree, they've been good episodes, some stronger than others. But this feels more like the feel, the vibe of season one, the scope of what's going on, the relationship of the crew of the Ghost, and like what actually is happening actually has immediate impact on the war between the Rebels and the Empire, I think.
Yeah, you definitely catch a lot of that building tension between the two groups, and you start to see that all develop. And I just every single episode this year, it's been so much fun to see. You know, this is the origins of the Rebel Alliance, and to see all the pieces coming together. And here we see just large pieces coming together. It's like when you're doing the puzzle on the table and you're getting some pieces together, but then you're waiting for that one to kind of connect them all. We're on our way.
I agree. We're very much on our way, and I think we're finally on the way to something we've been clamoring for as fans since we first were introduced to these characters long before the first episode of season one premiered, and that was something focused on Hera and Sabine. We still haven't gotten that for Sabine, but it looks like we will very, very soon. But we got a Hera-centered episode, and it more than lived up to the hype. It starts out with this incredible battle, and basically they're trying to get to Ibar for food supplies and different things for that planet because they're suffering. The Empire has shut them down. If they don't get these supplies to these people, they're going to starve. They're going to die. That's real cost. That's a reality of what happens in war. And on the way down to this planet, Hera has to take a couple of gambles, and they don't quite pay off the way she hoped, and they lose a ship. Talk about the reactions in that moment.
yeah, I made special note of that. It was so shocking to see. Well, I mean, you saw so many different levels of it. You hear the radio conversation of, we're losing our shields. We're losing ships. We're losing. I mean, you hear that. You see on Hera's face the shock, the determination, the surprise, the disappointment when they do lose the transport ship. But then we also visually see one of the, you know, I mean, when you see pictures of the entire Rebel fleet together, I mean, these are the big ships right now, these transports. And to lose one of those, you really feel the impact of that. And then not only that, and I don't know if I'm moving too far along here, but at the conclusion of that battle, right before they make their escape, they lose Phoenix Leader. And that was just, to me, was just tragic. And I'm sitting here going, this is an animated show, and here I'm getting goosebumps and feeling all these emotions. And so it was a huge opening scene. And I love the way they stick a commercial break, you know, the intro to a commercial break right in the middle of that battle. I mean, talk about, couldn't wait for those... for that break to be over, but it was really emotional. And to see Agent Kallus at the lead of this, and I don't think he's Agent Kallus anymore.
I don't remember him getting promoted, but he very much lives up to his namesake of Kallus in this particular moment.
so true. But it was neat to see his promotion, or at least his, you know, he's off world and he's commanding a blockade, and we know what that means. You know, right. It's going to be tough.
It's going to be very tough. I was interested in Hera's reaction, because she wasn't reckless, but she borderline on a bit reckless, because she kept pushing. And there's cost here, as I keep mentioning, because if they don't get this successful, this planet is going to starve. They're going to lose an entire system. So she says later in the episode that, you know, there's great risk, there's great cost when it comes to these things, but sacrifices have to be made. And even when we get back to headquarters, she kind of hits her fist on the table and she says, I know I can get a blockade through. So she feels bad. It hurts her, but she doesn't let it hold her up. And she's still almost really determined. It's almost like Kanan has to refocus her, which he later does, which is a nice turn of events for them.
Well, I think it's a great character development piece here, because when I think back to A New Dawn and then everything that we've seen thus far, she's almost been solo. I mean, she's been with this small group of rebels, but she's really been the leader of it. And she takes risks and she succeeds. And this is the first time, I mean, I want to say it's the first time, because I'm sure that there are other small, but this is the first time there was a lot of damage done because of her, well, I don't want to say recklessness, but because of her determination and letting that take over. So I'm wondering if we're going to see some reservation from her. I mean, we'll still see her abandon and her determination and her gusto, but I wonder if now they'll be in the back of her mind, there are other people at stake here.
Yeah, and you know, you get the sense she knew that, but I was just very intrigued, because she's almost been, not necessarily flawless, but we haven't had a lot of opportunity to see her rise and fall, because she's usually on the ship. She's not often on missions, or if she is, they're pretty successful. She's a great shot. She's a great pilot. Her instincts are uncanny. She has a great read for people. She is a leader, and we see in this one more than in any episode that she is very much a military strategist, and she's got a soul for this kind of thing, and her soul is featured all throughout this episode. So there is a new mission. Rex knows of an engineer who has a ship that has the fighter power to maybe take on this blockade, because without it, they're not going to. And Kanan volunteers Hera to lead the mission. Let's talk about Hera's reactions to this entire process.
She's a little surprised, I believe. And
she's actually kind of angry, to be honest.
Right. And it almost seems like, Kanan, how dare you? I mean, I think this would probably be something that would be right up her alley. But it's almost like someone else is telling her what to do here, or leading her path. And yeah, she doesn't care for that at all, which I think is interesting with, you know, looking at their relationship, that they've often worked together and they butt heads every now and then. But this, I can't think of another example where Kanan has said, you do that.
Right.
And told her what to do.
Well, and actually talking to you about this, it almost makes me think, maybe she wanted to stay back to help with the blockade because she wanted another chance, she wanted another go. And maybe Kanan sensed she was kind of walking a line, you know, between reckless and responsible. And maybe this is helping her to recenter, because he knows that she's at her best when she's in the air. And he knows she's the only pilot that can do this. He's using her strengths. That's what a good leader does. And this kind of helps her refocus and kind of keep things in check. I don't know. I'm certainly not doubting her, but I saw some real vulnerability. And she doubted herself without making it her essence, which I think is a sign of maturity and adulthood, because she's the mother of this crew, as we've said so many times. So it shows very much that she is fallible, which is nice to see. But she also knows she has a mission. And Kanan encourages her. And then I like how he tries to use some Jedi words on her. And she says, what, we're talking in riddles now? That was pretty cute, actually.
Yeah, I enjoyed that as well. It's, you know, as we're sitting here talking about it, and this is the first time we've really spoken about this, I wouldn't expect anything less from a Hera episode. You know, some surprises, some growth in her. And I like what you said about, you know, she is the mother of this crew. And we both know, being parents, we're not always perfect. And sometimes we have to extend ourselves a little bit. And sometimes we have to have people tell us what our strengths are and move along. So, yeah, I like those. I like those comments. Let's see. So, I don't know. When this jumped out at me, and it fits into that scene where they're standing in the command center of the Rebels, and they're talking about sending, and Rex walks in to tell about the B-bomber. And when they talked about what planet it's on, I don't recall the name of the planet that it's on, but I found it to be interesting that the Phoenix flight pilots kind of sounded, I don't know, not especially brilliant in intelligence. And I don't know if that was just for some comic relief or what it was, but they just were not going to, they didn't have much to say about landing on that planet, which we saw to be an issue. I also enjoyed Ezra and Chopper back to their old ways of arguing and their playfulness. It was kind of nice to see Ezra just kind of go back to who he is and be a kid again, and see Chopper back to his old ways as well.
Right. And so the planet, we looked it up while we were speaking, and the planet is Shantipol, and StarWars.com always has a great episode gallery of all these episodes of trivia and things like that. So there's this incredible blockade buster, as we talked about. So he picks Hera because she's the fleet's best pilot, and I don't think anyone would disagree with that. So as they're heading down to the surface, the planet more than lives up to its reputation, and it loses power. Again, so many metaphors in this. It's cloudy, there's electricity, there's energy, and there's distraction. They lose power, and they lose a little bit of, they don't lose their hope, but they lose the ability to escape. So they can't avoid this. This is fate intervening, as it does in Star Wars, and they got to get out of there. And I thought it was interesting the way that they skid, the way that they land, and they're greeted by someone who looks a bit familiar to us. He's a Mon Calamari, and his name is Quarry. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I love that. That Quarry was such a cool little character, and I say that because he's little, and he's got a lot of character, and he's stubborn, which I think we see that at times from other Mon Calamari that we meet along the way. So very characteristic there. But he's hiding on this planet, and I love that he says. He says that, I wrote that it was interesting that Rex doesn't mention how kind of disagreeable and cantankerous he is. But I love the comment that he makes as they're walking into the hangar where the blockade buster is sitting. He says, well, I don't get many visitors. Most of them crash.
Yeah, he's just very nonchalant about it. And I think he's just more like, he's a little bit gruff and rough around the edges, but it's because he knows what he wants. And he's not mean, he's just very direct, and he does not worry about your feelings, which is an interesting tactic. And I see he and Hera's relationship, it's not Yoda and Luke. It's not master and apprentice. But there is definitely an incredible mutual respect there, because they both love to fly. They both love flying, and I thought that was pretty interesting. I also love the irony, by the way, when they're crashing, the fact that she's the best pilot, and she can't fly the plane. So this is like an example of her conceivable self-doubt, which is just brewing below the surface, and how she has to kind of face that. And she really comes face to face with her origins as a person. So why do they build this plane on this planet? And he says, if you can fly the ship here, you can fly it anywhere, because Hera comments on it. Well, this is not a great place to fly a plane. And he says, besides, the Empire's not going to expect it. And then we see it. And I wrote down some weird thing. I thought it said bleed wing, but it's the blade wing. It's the blade, which is pretty cool. Yeah. And it's the prototype. And what do you think about this first appearance of the B-wing?
See, when I saw it, I thought it was so cool. But Zeb mentions how it's a piece of junk, or I don't know. Someone they all are disappointed in the way this looks, and I love all of the B words to describe this, because we end up calling it a B wing, or I believe is what the model eventually becomes. But the blockade buster and the blade wing and all of those things. I thought it looked really cool.
I love the orange too. It's very very much like the Rebellion, honestly.
Yeah, and interestingly, again, Corey says, I didn't even like the color of it now that I'm looking at it, and it's just a prototype and all those things, while I'm sitting here thinking, that's really cool. I can't wait to see that flying.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the flying, and of course we haven't mentioned it, but clearly Corey's name is an homage to Ralph McQuarrie. I'd say that's fair to say. He's even got the little Arabesh on his vest, I'm sorry, pouch, what am I talking about? Mm-hmm. So it's fast, it's agile, it's got high-intensity blasters and ion cannon and proton torpedoes. And as a bit of a segue, you and I were having quite a debate this morning, not a debate, but a discussion about, okay, this weapon that the B-Wing has, that would have been handy against the Death Star, but I don't recall that being fired in Return of the Jedi, and I realize this is somewhat retconning the Star Wars universe, but interesting to see how that has developed, too. Hey, it's Dan Z.
And Corey Club.
From Coffee with Kenobi. And we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes, you've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Let's talk about her story, her explanation to Corey about why she's a pilot and why she does what she does.
Yeah, I thought that was, I mean, it's what a great story, you know, watching the Republic pilots and how she'd peek out from danger to watch them up there and thinking that's, you know, there's nothing more in her life than she wanted to do than to do that. And while she currently is a pilot of the Ghost, of course, it's not quite the same thing, you know, I think that she desires more, and through the conversation, you really get that. And some beautiful language used in here as well. I think they both use it, Corey and Hera use it in different times, but, you know, words like soaring and just, you know, it brings more than just combat, and it's more than just, I don't know, winning a battle or something. It's the love of doing it. And the beauty of it all. And so and going back to what you had said about he's testing her, I thought he was testing her from the start. You know, when they're trying to repair the Phantom, he knows it's broken, and they mess around with it, and then he brings out the parts. And then there's another scene where, and I don't recall the scene exactly, but where Hera is struggling with something, and he says, well, this is how you do it. And she's like, oh. And so... I definitely think it's a test. First, to see if she's worthy to pilot this new craft that he's built. But also, I think he knows that more is at stake here.
Yeah, absolutely. She her explanation of being on Ryloth and looking up and seeing these planes soaring. On RebelsReconStars.com, stars.com. They all blend together after a while, don't they, ladies and gentlemen? Dave and Pablo talk about the fact that they want to express that Hera wants to rise above this planet And in many ways, it's like a psychological compulsion to leave, to not be grounded, because she felt so helpless when she was a kid. So no wonder she wants to fly and to soar. And when he finally does agree to let her fly, and at first he says, you know, I don't know if it flies. I've never flown it. It starts to crash. Sabine and Zeb are not happy. But then in this incredibly beautiful, beautiful moment, she rises above. She's in her rotating gyroscopic cockpit. He says she's masterful, the way that she drives, the way she flies. It's very much an extension of her. They really become one, these two. I think it's typified the natural way of her in a cockpit is when she's flying with these reptilian birds. It reminds me of Jurassic Park, sort of at the end with the helicopter flying away and the birds. It just shows that this is a part of Hera's natural self. Her being in the air is as natural as these birds, and it was just so captivating. It was a breathtaking moment. It really was.
Yeah, I loved that moment. And of course, I can't let this scene pass without talking about Zeb a little bit. I'm coming to really enjoy Zeb and sort of his way. And I love when he reveals, when Corey reveals that he's never flown this craft before, and Zeb says, well, I'll just shove you off the edge if anything happens to her. I love that. But then you have...
He's got a little chopper in him, doesn't he?
He does have a little chopper. Maybe he's... Yeah, they do hang out an awful lot together. But then the blade wing drops, and you have that moment. They run to the edge, and then there it goes. And it's just... And it takes off. I mean, you said it so well that it goes off. And a couple things came across my mind when I saw that happen. I thought, well, here is the inaugural flight. And so it's a birth of a new craft, but it's so much more than just the birth of a new craft. And it's Hera. It's Hera, and there she is, and she's soaring with the birds. And
she reaches another level in a lot of ways in this episode.
She does. And it's just, it's such a beautiful flight that she takes. And I love that they took time to let her fly around before she tested the weapons and learned about how that works. But we got to see that. And there's that scene, and we mentioned right before we started the show, how you're kind of riding alongside as a third person looking at the craft, and you see the cockpit sits still and the wing just swings around, and it's just, oh, it was so, so cool.
It's super cool. Like literally, like when there's chaos and things are flipping around, she's still calm and in the center. Like, personifies her. Isn't that cool?
That is fantastic.
So they have to... There's some things that have to happen for them to get out of here and to go and help Kanan and everybody, because Kanan already had to get going. The people of Ibar can't wait anymore. They can't wait. So, and they can't communicate with Hera, so they don't know what's going on. Another subtle reminder of how important communication is, directly or indirectly. So Corey has to install a hyperdrive on the Phantom. I believe that was his idea. And that ends up being pretty cool, because what happens is this. Sabine has to help with the weaponry, because, you know, don't say between a Mando and weaponry or targeting, or I don't remember the words she said on that.
Yeah, something like don't stand between a Mandalorian and her weapons.
Yeah, and that was cool. So they have to, literally the Phantom has to connect with the B-Wing, and together they're able to be a formidable duo. And I like the dichotomy of this, because the Phantom represents Hera's old way and who she was before this episode started, and very much having a drive and a purpose, but not quite getting to that next level yet for a number of reasons. And then with this B-Wing and her kind of reconnecting with herself, it's the old and the new to create a more established, more effective leader. And she was already incredibly effective as it is, but she is uniting people from across the galaxy to fight the Empire. And it's like she's taking the younger part of herself, and they're both lifting up together. I'm getting all psychological here, but it's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, you're covering it all, and I'm just loving every bit of it, watching it. I'm gonna back up and sort of bring it down to simpler terms of when I saw that happen. It just reminded me. It took me back to the Clone Wars when the Jedi would travel through hyperspace in their fighters, and they catch the hyperdrive ring. That's what it reminded me of.
But yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
Yours is so much deeper and better. I loved it.
No, that, you're right though. It's cool. And isn't it cool though when the B-Wing shows up, Cal says, I hardly call that reinforcements. Underestimating something that looks smaller. Yoda, Bilbo, and Frodo Baggins. If we can go to Lord of the Rings for 5 seconds. Underestimating Ezra. Underestimating R2. Underestimating Chopper. You know, size matters not. And the B-Wing is a formidable opponent. When it shows up, it moves into attack position, which they can't believe. And then we've got this blockbuster weapon, which, again, I mean, this would have been so beneficial on the Death Star. But that's okay, because it is a thing of beauty. And the way it kind of forms, it almost forms like a little arrow. Mm-hmm. We're looking at stars.com in the episode gallery as we're doing this together. It's really, I don't know why we didn't do this before. Corey, what are you doing, man? So it's really, really neat. And it just forms this arrow, and it knifes through the defenses. It's called the Blade. I just came up with that there. Any impressions of this overall battle? Because it was really something to behold. And you even mentioned how much you love these.
Yeah, I at the start of the battle, I love when the officer says the new craft, or whatever language he used, is moving to attack position. They have this. They go to Kallus's face, and you see surprise and concern and wonder all in just a moment. It's great work, artwork there on his just running him through the emotions of, like, trying to figure out what this thing is that he's looking at. And then as you mentioned, when it flies through it, it's such a powerful scene when you've got that triangle or that arrow of lasers joining together in one, like the Death Star, you know, when they going. And that was a great, I loved that part. And I was a little disappointed that they didn't keep that for future scenes with the B-Wing, because it's a really powerful vision. But then knocks out the, and I don't know if those are Star Destroyers or if they're early versions or what they are exactly, but it knocks that thing out. It slices right through it, as you mentioned.
And Kallus even says, that's impossible. Like, he is literally dumbstruck by what he sees.
Mm-hmm. Right, but it works. They get the, they break the blockade, and the supplies are on the Ghost, and Kanan gets down there and saves them all, and the B-Wing supports him on the way out.
Right, a thing of beauty. And you can't help but wonder and be a little bit nervous. I mean, Freddie has told us that this season gets dark, and they've had so many small victories, and even Kallus now can't underestimate them after seeing what he sees with his own eyes. Vader's not underestimating them. Tarkin, I don't think, is underestimating them. But it's not going to be all victory on something bad's probably going to happen really soon, which makes me really nervous.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of the previews of the next episode or anything else coming up, but you just have the sense. I mean, we got a little, I don't know, foreshadowing with the beginning of this episode, and the rebels are definitely human. They you know, lost the first attack on the blockade, lost Phoenix Leader and a transport. You know, they almost starved, but definitely. Definitely darker things are ahead.
It's wild. So, and just having the Mon Calamari, if you look again at the trivia gallery for Wings of the Master, back in the Strike Force Shantanpul, it's the old West End Games stuff. There's some hints there that the B-Wing Mon Calamari was pivotal in that. So it's cool to see that they're pulling from the old canon. I know Pablo Hidalgo was so instrumental in a lot of West End Games stuff and loved those so much. So it's cool that they're holding that stuff true. And definitely, of course, McCory is inspiration there. It's some really great things going on. And apparently, the Aurobesh on the side of the B-Wing cockpit says prototype B-6. So that's a little bit trivia for you, if you're ever on Jeopardy, of course. So before it's over, something really beautiful happens. Tell us what happens with Hera at the end of this episode.
So they get back to command ship, and they're unloading, and the commander says to Hera, that Kanan has recommended her for something, and she's like, what now? And Kanan says, just listen to what he has to say, which sounded to me very Han Solo-ish, but that's just me. But they give her the promotion within the rebel fleet of Phoenix Leader. So now she's more than just captain of her own ship. She's the leader of the fleet,
right,
and is what she wanted all along. This is her dream come true.
She's the archetype of the family, the surrogate family, and now her family has grown exponentially because she's in charge of all of Phoenix Squadron. That's incredible. I mean, she's the general of everything, right? So she's got a lot of duties and responsibilities. And the way that she takes this, and the way Kanan—it's like Kanan knows—and I don't know how instrumental he was in suggesting it, but it seems like it was a done deal anyway, as far as that goes. It's also worth noting that as they're learning again to work more and more together and to combine the old and the new, if you look at the redesign of the Phantom now with the hyperdrive, there's a new socket, so an astromech has to be piloting this as well. So there's no more escape missions where they can kind of go solo or do that kind of stuff, because they, the bigger they get and the more successful they get, the more they have to use all of their resources to take care of this mighty, mighty opponent, which is the Empire. It's really, I think it would be a real detriment or a disappointment if when Rogue One comes out, if we don't have some sort of mention of the crew of the Ghost, because they're clearly so instrumental. It's hard to believe that Hera doesn't have something to do with taking the Death Star plans. You know what I mean?
That's what I anticipate. And that's, and if it doesn't happen that way, I'm sure whatever they come up with will be just as amazing. But my assumption has been thus far is that this is the group. I mean, it's hard telling, but yeah, they're definitely growing, and the Rebellion is becoming more of a force. But one thing I wanted to say about this whole mission, regardless of the breaking blockade and everything else that I loved about this episode, and my daughter and I talked about it. We're watching these together. We talked about how their mission here was not necessarily a mission of military. They were not coming into this position to, they were not coming to the planet to attack someone, to take someone out. They're coming as a mercy mission. And when you go back way to season one, the very beginning of the whole Rebels concept, that's what they were doing, is they were running missions of mercy. And I think it's so cool that they're staying true to that, and we're seeing that here.
Very well said. So I can probably guess what our final grade is going to be, but still, any last-minute thoughts or reflections on Wings of the Master?
It just makes me want to keep watching more, for sure.
Yeah, it was the best episode of Season 2 since the premiere. One of the better episodes of Rebels that I've ever seen, and the fact that we finally get to see Hera in the spotlight, showing vulnerability, showing doubt, rising above adversity, and addressing the inner child in herself. And she's not a flawed or fractured character. She's not Bruce Wayne. She's not Anakin Skywalker, but she's a human. She's a human being, even though she's in a Twi'lek's body. And the fact that she overcomes certain things, she doesn't let weakness hold her back. She perseveres through it, and she's really inspiring. And which is why my final grade for this episode is an A. It's not quite an A+, and I guess I don't know what would be an A+ if this is an A+. Something about the way she reacted at the beginning, I still am sort of having a hard time with. Maybe it's just I'm not used to her being so vulnerable, and that's sort of scary because, you know, how we are when we have our heroes. We don't want them to be vulnerable because we like to know that we can be taken care of. So I'm going to give this a very strong A. Oh, what the heck? We'll give it an A+. It's an A+. What about you?
Yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking, I don't know if it's possible to give it two grades, because in my anticipation of a story for Hera, I give it an A+. But I give it an A as an episode because I think there's so many more. I think when you look at it in the grand scheme of the entire season and the whole story, I think we've got a lot. There's a lot more that could come along we'll look back at this and be like, wow, that was great. But now what about this one? And so I'm going to give it an A because I think they've got more up their sleeve.
Okay. Fair enough. What do you think? What grade would you give Wings of the Master? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter or make a comment on our web post here. But thanks so much again for joining us for Rebels Reactions, Tom. Great to have you on. Where can people reach out to you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
On Twitter, I'm at Draftline, and just jump on there with me, and we can talk Rebels, we can talk Star Wars, or Draftline is a cycling term, and so if you're a cyclist, hey, I'll jump on that with you too.
Very good. Well, thanks again so much for being on. It's always great to have conversations with you about Star Wars. If people worked here with us, they would see how much fun we have every day talking about Star Wars when we can. Of course, we got to do our jobs. But, you know, we fit it in when we can, and we have a great time. So thanks, everybody, for joining us on Rebels Reactions. Our next episode, we'll be looking at a focus on Sabine. Very exciting.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.